Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about the movies that aren't talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we will be discussing the 2006 horror comedy Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. But first, let me introduce the killer I'd most want to make a documentary about, Donnie Nelson.
It's me. They haven't caught me yet.
No. But will they? That's the sequel.
Well, in this day and age of the internet, I think it will be very hard for me to get away now that we've discussed it on a podcast, Jason. Please. Oh, God, this is going out to a lot of people. Oh, no one listens to this show anyway, so we're fine. That's good.
Yeah. So,
hi, Jace.
Hi, Jace. Jace and I think my friend Bobby listens to it occasionally, and probably like five other people. But not regularly enough for us to mention. All right, well, that was fun.
What? Yeah.
Let's move on from.
Are we good?
Stupid conversation that we started having. All right. Yeah. So, for those of you who have been listening to the show, we're mixing things up a bit. We're gonna stop talking about the stuff that's in the theaters because this is gonna be more fun. We're gonna talk about movies that we genuinely love that we don't think enough people get their hands on, or maybe I should say get their eyes and their ears on.
AV. Oh. Yeah.
And I did a visual hand gesture when I said that, so you know, for an audio medium it really works. For those of you who don't know, Donnie and I typically have whole conversations in sign language going on while we're talking about the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it's just to tell each other we have to go to the bathroom.
I have to poop.
You need to talk longer about whatever you're talking about.
Stretch.
I don't want to edit the show. All right. Well, we've talked about this movie, I don't know, probably more than any other movie on this show. I mean, just in terms of mentioning it. So clearly this is a film that is close to both our hearts. And before we get into it, I have a question for you, good sir, which is, what is the worst thing that you have seen recently?
The worst thing I've seen recently, because it is not the best thing, because the best thing is the only movie that I watched, and the worst thing is not a movie. Yep, nope, nothing. So, I honestly don't. I haven't been watching a whole bunch of movies lately. And you know what? Actually, in preparation for what my best movie was, I'm just going to go out and say Toy Story 2, not the best film in that series. So that is probably the worst thing I saw, because I watched the first one, and it still has like this weird kind of magic to it that mm-hmm. is like, it's still a little off kilter, and it's like going to be the template for pretty much all the CGI films that came after it, since it was so revolutionary. And Toy Story 2 is like not a bad follow-up, but it is also like, it pales in comparison with every other entry into that franchise. Mm-hmm. So if I had to pick something to say that was the worst thing that I saw since the last time we recorded, it would be Toy Story 2.
I think that what amazes me is the most terrifying thing I think I've ever seen in terms of like a holy CGI creature is that baby head with the spider legs in the first Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little kid, that was the most disturbing thing to me. And out of all of the horror movies that I have seen, I have never seen anything that has upset me that is holy CGI as much as that baby head with the spider legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't think of anything.
And now, just to be clear, I am just talking about holy CGI creatures, so nothing, right. Nothing that's practical effects, nothing that's a guy in a mask. But
No, and nothing that's stop motion.
All right. Well, that sets a high bar because Toy Story 2 is still pretty baller. So, but I think I know. I think you mentioned your number one to me earlier. All right. I am going to go ahead and also say that my worst thing that I've seen recently is not a film that I don't like. It's just not that good. And that is Todd Phillips' War Dogs.
Okay.
With Miles Teller and Jonah Hill. That movie that I feel like a lot of people were really excited about, and then it kind of came out and then just left. And everybody everybody forgot about it.
Well, everybody, at least, I don't know if we'd made the joke before, but it was just like, wow, it seems really soon for them to be remaking Lord of War.
Yeah, no, and it, I mean, I really like both those guys, and I think that they have good chemistry together, and I think that the story is really interesting. And I think that part of it was just unfortunate timing because it's kind of this weird military version of The Wolf of Wall Street. And it came out at around the same time as The Wolf of Wall Street, which is just a way better movie. And I don't know. I also just feel bad because like I think that Todd Phillips has really great ideas, and I think that a lot of times the movies that he makes are so close to being like masterpieces. He just, for some reason, he can't quite nail the landing. And I definitely think that this is one of them. And that's kind of what makes me nervous about the Joker movie. But fingers crossed.
Yeah. The thing I have hope for in the Joker movie is that he's going by, like, a pretty specific... There's a very specific direction, at least the trailer shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a little bit more faith that, like, he is going to have, like, his direction, which, you know, Todd Phillips, most of what I know from him is from the Hangover movies. And I feel like Warner Brothers and DC... I think they probably have a specific idea, and they just need someone to follow through with the thing that they wanted to do. So, in that case, like, if the trailer is anything to be believed, then I think we're just going to get... We're going to get pretty much what that trailer promises. It could bend one way or the other, but, you know, yeah. So, yeah. War Dogs, not a good sign.
It's okay.
Okay.
I mean, it's
well. Let's
it's
hope
fine.
The Joker movie is it's okay. Maybe a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I hope it's more than that. All right. So I feel like that's enough time spent talking about War Dogs. what's the best thing that you've seen recently?
The best thing I've seen recently is Toy Story 4.
Yes.
Toy Story 4 is very good. It is a good film, considering it is Toy Story 4. Because we already had a Toy Story 3, and I don't know if I've just been conditioned, but it was a trilogy, and Toy Story 3 seemed to be, like, the ending point, because the end of that movie was, like, a very clear send-off, like, you know, Andy had grown up, he has all of his toys, and then he, spoilers for Toy Story 3, shut up, you can't even, like, get at me, bro. If you haven't seen Toy Story 3 at this point, then you... don't care about animated film at all. The very end of it is Andy giving away his toys, which is like a very clear, like, you have to move on, you've grown up with these characters, and now there's a very clear send-off where they all had their moments where they all, like, were facing you know, death, and then they were saved miraculously and given a new life, and then you would think, hey, I think they're done with Toy Story. But Pixar, you know, they've been winding up the sequel machine for quite a while at this point. And so Toy Story 4, I had, like, same thing I said with Secret Life of Pets, both of them. It was just, like, the first one was okay, the second one's pretty good. But, like, I wasn't expecting, like, a whole bunch from it other than a good time. But, like, it actually has some things to say, considering, and is, can also work as a send-off for that franchise. Like, I won't go into specifics because Toy Story 4 did just come out, and I will not spoil it if you don't want to. But it is a lot more about the basic setup, and what's been the marketing is the girl that owns all the toys now, she makes a toy at her first day of preschool, and it's called Forky.
Forky!
And so she creates a toy, and then there's... the story kind of goes off and does its conventional thing, but like a good part of it is Forky trying to like go back into the trash. Doesn't necessarily mean he wants to die, but he's just like, oh, the trash is cozy and I like being there because he's a spork. He is supposed to be thrown in the trash. And then that theme is kind of continued on through the rest of it, and him coming to terms with the fact that he's now a toy. But there, like I said, that's not spoiling a huge arc. That is just pretty much like the smallest part, but like a through line of the film. And they really make like Buzz a really small and dumb character in that movie. And I don't know exactly why. Because it is like mostly the Woody show at this point. Like, I don't know, if you wanted someone leading your cast, especially if it's a voice cast, would you want Tom Hanks or Tim Allen? You know, you'd probably want Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is like more, no offense, Tim. You know what? All offense, Tim Allen. Tom Hanks is the more versatile actor, even when he's only using his voice. And it's just a good movie. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was, considering it's like their tentpole franchise still after all these years. But it is. It is really good. And I honestly wouldn't mind if they keep making them until... I shouldn't say that. Rest in peace, Jim Varney. Original Slinky Dog. But yeah, that was what I watched. That was the best thing.
Didn't they have to retire somebody else, too?
Retire?
Yeah, like one of the other toys because the voice actor died.
It's possible, but...
Was it the pig?
Well, no, the pig has been consistent. Okay. They grabbed another another regular Pixar voice actor to replace Jim Varney in Toy Story 3. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember the actor's name, but he is pretty much just doing like his best Jim Varney accent or impersonation. There might be another toy that they had to just retire straight up. But, it was sad.
All right.
Well, sad days.
I look forward to seeing it, and, I mean, that's how I feel about a lot of movies, John Wick included. Just keep making them. I feel the same way about the Barbershop movies. Keep making them. I'll keep watching them.
It worked for the Bond franchise.
Yep. All right, well.
What's the best thing you watched?
The best thing that I watched is a film that I have owned for maybe 3 years and finally got around to watching, and it is not Alpha.
What?
Because Alpha is not 3 years old. It is a movie that is done by Woody Allen, and I think it came out in 2013 or 2014. And it is Blue Jasmine.
With Cate Blanchett.
With a whole lot of people, Cate Blanchett included. As well as Alec Baldwin, Andrew Dice Clay. One of my favorite guys, Bobby Cannavale, or Cannavale, however you say his name. He's in there. Louis C.K. is in there, and... his role is kind of uncomfortable, especially considering, you know, the stuff we know about him now. Mm-hmm. But then again,
you're watching a Woody Allen film.
Yep. And Peter Sarsgaard and a bunch of other people. And I believe this is, like, considered to be the best of Woody Allen's later films. So... Out of the stuff for the second half of his career, this is like the best thing to come out of that, and I really liked it. I I was surprised because the first time I tried to watch it, I was bored out of my mind. And I think I only made it about 10 minutes in, and then I switched to something else. And this time, I was 100% on board. And I really, really liked it. So it's really interesting. They tell the story out of order, which sometimes is a gimmick of his. They do a lot of interesting stuff with the characters. Kate Blanchett is always wonderful to watch. I feel like she's one of the people I would be most intimidated to meet in real life. Because she's just so intense, and she's such a good actress. So yeah, no, I really liked it. It was really funny, and it was a really interesting look at how we interact with each other and our relationships, and how we're all just garbage human beings.
Yeah.
So hooray,
that lines up.
Yeah, right. So yeah, no, I don't know if you've had the chance to see Blue Jasmine, but I believe it is on Netflix, and it is well worth the time if you get the time.
Okay.
So
yeah, when I go on my great Kate Blanchett catch up tour, then that will be when I watch it, because there are a lot of movies I would like to point out. If you do want to watch Kate Blanchett cameo in a film, she is in Hot Fuzz, which is maybe one of the funniest cameos in all of history, as well as Peter Jackson being the Santa Claus that stabs
Sergeant Nicholas Engel.
Yep. So she can still act for a very small amount of time with just her eyes. She is that good.
She can also play Bob Dylan.
She can also play Bob Dylan. This is correct.
What can't she do? All right. And
Kate, no, Audrey Hepburn.
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 All right. Well, let's get into Behind the Mask, which is a film that I think I saw for the first time like 10 years ago. It was just something on Netflix that I think I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And then I got it and I watched it, and I was like, oh my God. And then did I tell you about it?
Or? I believe so, because okay. I think I've always gone past it. And looked at it and been like, this looks stupid. This is just another one of those like trashy horror films that is made for no budget. Because I would even say on the back of the Blu-ray... Yeah, on the back of the Blu-ray that I own, like, I mean, the description is in here for the summary of the plot, but like the pictures like just make it look like just one of those low budget films that you'd buy for $5 in a bargain bin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. It sounds. I mean, you're right. It sounds like a college student film, like a short film that somebody would make and then just stretch out to turn it into a feature film. And I think I can confidently say that neither of us feel that way about it, because it's a movie that we talk about a lot and we both really enjoy. So for those of you, which is probably going to be everyone who listens to this show, who's unfamiliar with Behind the Mask, it is meant to be a mockumentary type look at a horror killer on the same level as Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers. They directly mention Chucky, and they also mention one of the characters is a reference to, is it Black Christmas? I think it's Black Christmas.
So.
Yeah,
I don't know that I couldn't catch. I couldn't tell you for sure, but it doesn't surprise me.
It's Gene, the guy that's like his mentor.
Oh,
his name is Gene or Billy. And he's meant to be a reference to Black Christmas, which I've never seen. So
that being said, anything to that.
That being said, it's about this group of college students who are making a documentary, and they just kind of follow him around, and they do it. They do the horror bits really well, because when they go to show it as actual movie, it stops being a mockumentary or a found footage type movie, and it switches to a you know, a well shot horror movie. And they've got lighting and everything, and it just looks like a regular movie.
Yeah, which is always really funny, because it seems like they're using the same kind of cameras that they're using for, like, the documentary footage as they are for the actual movie. So I think, not that, like, I don't want to ding the filmmakers a lot for that, but when it does cut between, it is very noticeable, and it does kind of look a little bit budget when they're doing the actual horror parts. But then when it's a documentary, then, like, you expect that it's not as high quality because, you know, they're, like, using, you know, like, consumer grade or, like, just above, like, TV productions in high school grade, you know, camera equipment. So then at that point, it's kind of, it's a little jarring, because I did just watch it and it still holds up, but that is something that kind of is kind of a little bit jarring at first.
Yeah, so they kind of follow him around for the first half of the movie, and then, I don't know, like the last half, I mean, it's only like 90 minutes, so.
I would say, yeah, it's 90 minutes, I would say last quarter or last third.
Yeah.
I think the documentary goes until pretty much right before the house.
Yep, which is like the last 30 minutes of the movie. It turns into a full-fledged horror movie. So, let's talk about Behind the Mask. All right, so I want to start. I feel like the first thing we've kind of already touched on, but just to break it down a little bit more, the format of how this movie is made is absolutely genius, in my opinion. I think that it works both as a satire and a love letter of and to slasher films. And I think that the way that they did it, and I know you're, I mean, you're right, like, it is very notable that the production quality of the horror elements of the film are quite low. But I feel like, you know, that's the best way that they could have done that. Like, in 2006, this is probably the best version of this movie that we could have gotten.
Well, the thing I would say to that aspect is that, like, there is a sense of having to suspend disbelief with this movie. Like, you cannot go into this movie, or we probably did, and that's what the first scene with the scare sets up is like, oh, this is just typical, like, beginning of a horror movie, sets it up, and then it jumps right into the documentary footage to kind of, like, and the first time that they meet Leslie, which is, like, so disarming, because you see the character in the first scene, which is shot like a horror film, and then it goes to this documentary with these people, with the essentially the characters we're spending most of the movie with. And then, like, they meet Leslie as we meet Leslie, and he's so weird.
He is.
he's disarmingly charming, but he's also a weirdo who is 100% into what, like, he is dedicated. He is 100% doing what he wants to do, and he doesn't see anything wrong with that. And so there's a suspension of disbelief that you have to be like, why would these grad kids who have gotten out of, you know, who are, you know, doing, like, their master thesis, as it were, and, like, they're doing, they got a hold of a person who, like, I guess hasn't killed anyone yet, but says that he is going to.
Yep.
And that he wants to be like Jason. He wants to be like Michael Myers. He wants to be like Chucky. And so it's very weird. Like, I think, I mean, there's even a point later in the film where, like, stuff gets real, let's just say. And, like, I don't think they, like, actually believed he was capable of actually doing the thing that he's saying. Because, yeah, like, maybe that grounds it a little bit more, but...
Well, and I feel like, you know, I feel like we have to talk about this movie with spoilers, so if you do want to check out Leslie Vernon, then you should definitely pause this, watch it, come back and listen to our conversation. But one of the moments that I watched, like, when I watched it earlier today, and I haven't watched it for a while, but one of the moments that I do genuinely find upsetting, and there aren't a lot of moments that I think are upsetting, but it's when Todd is laying on the ground and Leslie's, like, going to kill him. And Todd, like, pulls his mask up and he's like, "What are you doing? It's me, Todd. You're Leslie. We're having a good time. Just..."
Yeah, we were buddies the whole movie.
Why are you killing me? And then Leslie just snaps his neck and gets up and walks away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great that they are able to create a character who is so damn likable. And I think a lot of that has to do with, and don't get me wrong, like, I think this whole cast, especially in terms of the budget, I mean, this whole cast is just phenomenal. But Nathan Basil, I believe is the name of the guy that plays Leslie Vernon, is absolutely fantastic. And especially, I mean, the moment that has always sold me on this movie is when they're interviewing him. And he's like, "Oh, it's so hard. I gotta do so much cardio every day. Everybody else is running around.
You don't know how much cardio it is. It's ridiculous. I have to leap around like a gazelle because I can't run.
Yeah.
I have to walk. And then when they're looking away, then I have to run faster than them. It's ridiculous."
Yeah.
And he's, like, saying this and, like, as he's, like, super sweating after a workout, he's been punching a body bag like a complete dork. He's trying to, because, like, he's actually trying to work out. And when you're actually trying to work out, you don't look cool. And, like, you can tell that he's actually trying to do this.
Yep.
And it's just so funny for, like, someone who, like, says that he is, like, one of these iconic killers or wants to be one, then he's, like, he's really trying to, like, break down the hows on how to do this stuff. Be like, "Yeah, you don't see Jason running. Like, that's not what he does."
Yep.
So,
Yeah, no. And, I mean, another thing that works so great about this movie that hits so hard is the comedy. And it is so clever. And that's just, I mean, one aspect. But how excited they get when... Robert Englund's character shows up. They call him an Ahab, which, I mean, I'm pretty sure is a reference to Moby Dick, but
Leslie Vernon, as it were, would be the Moby Dick to Robert Englund's Ahab. Yep.
And He dresses exactly like Dr. Loomis from...
Mm-hmm. Which is not a coincidence at all.
Yeah, and that is one of the things there's a lot of times when movies do references, and I think this is one of the things that, like, Adam Sandler comedies are the most guilty of, where they just make references to shit and expect you to laugh or smile or nod or be like, "I know that." Especially the other two I was gonna say are the guys that did Date Movie and Epic Movie and Meet,
like, Seltzer, and I can't remember the other
names. Those two fucknuts who are just putting out abortions of movies. Anyway, when they make references to stuff in this movie, it doesn't just feel like, "Hey, remember this?" And a great example of that is in the opening of the movie, one of the things that works so well in establishing the world that you're about to enter is after... So the movie opens with a horror movie style intro, kind of like what you described. There's a girl who goes out to put something in a garbage. She looks up, sees Leslie for a split second, and then the door slams, and then she has to go back inside and runs away. And then it opens with the documentary portion, and I forget her name, but the female character who's kind of the lead other than Leslie. I want to say her name's Natalie, but I know that's not it. She is doing this thing where she's like, hey, look, this is...
Taylor.
Yep, Taylor. Taylor does this thing where she's like, look, this is Camp Crystal Lake, where Jason Voorhees murdered a bunch of people. And this is Elm Street, where even thinking about Freddy Krueger can supposedly get you killed. And this is Haddonfield, where Michael Myers ruined Halloween for everyone. And it's great because, one, they're establishing that, like, every horror movie you've ever seen has taken place in this world. And
which is ridiculous to think about.
I know. But it's still a fun idea. Mm-hmm. And Leslie is just trying to make a name for himself in this world. And when they do stuff like that, I don't feel like it's just, hey, look, remember this? It's, you know, genuinely showing appreciation for these types of movies. Which is something I appreciate.
Yeah. That kind of brings up another aspect to it that is, like, very meta. Because, like, for a second there, when they were talking to Billy / Eugene, mm-hmm. Which, yes, was the killer from Black Christmas, apparently, or, like, the person over the phone, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. That's the reference there when I was looking up. When they go to see him, because they're like, hey, be like, I'm the future of this business, so I thought I'd bring you to this old dude, which they have to go out into the woods and dig him up because he's in a sound deprivation chamber because they need to know how to, like, look dead. So, and they say, like, oh, he's been retired. and be like, oh, why does he still do it? And then they gloss over that. But when they actually get to, like, they're all charming people. Like, none of them seem creepy at all. And when they're talking to him with Leslie and the whole documentary crew, like, it almost, like, is directly ripped out of a documentary of, like, people behind the scenes in horror films and be like, oh, this is why we do it. Like, you know, Jason and Michael, they change the game and be like, well, are you talking about movies now? Or are you actually talking about, like, because they establish that it's real in the world, mm-hmm. but the way that they're talking about it and the fact that, like, they go to this guy's house who apparently has, you know, like, done this a lot and they don't think too much of it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain kind of, like, what's going on here? Why don't you just turn this person in, like, right? Like, what's wrong? But, like, those sections, I was just like, they're just talking about horror films. They're just talking about how, like, each decade of horror films has changed the other ones. Specifically, you know, the stalker, the, you know, mm-hmm. the Jason, the Michael Myers genre, the slasher film.
Well, and
they're just...
Just real quick, I want to jump in and say one of the really funny comments that Eugene or Billy, whatever his name is, makes mm-hmm. is back in my day, it was all about quantity over quality, just how many people could you kill? And then mm-hmm. he talks about Michael and Jason and Freddy showing up and really focusing in on, like, one person or one purpose as opposed to just...
Well, he specifically says, like, oh, you'd never hit the same thing twice or same mm-hmm. location twice. And they'd be like, and then you got Jason and, like, yep. Michael Myers, who, like, always goes back to Haddonfield or always goes back to, you know, Camp Crystal Lake. And you're like, that was unheard of. They just revolutionized it. And be like, yeah, I see what you're talking about. It's, like, very, very thin film between, like, you talking about these people who apparently exist in this world and then them as, like, horror franchises. Mm-hmm. So, like, you, people in the know will, I think, will get a kick out of that. Mm-hmm. But, sorry if I interrupted your train of thought.
Oh, no, that's fine. I was just blabbering on about whatever I was talking about.
I mean, that's what we do on this podcast anyway, so that's good.
It's also really great to see a film because, you know, the... When did Blair Witch come out? Was it the 90s?
Blair Witch was late 90s, yeah, correct.
Okay, so... And that was what kickstarted the whole found footage thing. Like, mm-hmm. the whole whatever. And that's when we got all these really, really, really horrible, low-budget horror movies that were all really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. at least for the most part. I'm not going to say all of them. And then... This came out probably at the tail end of all of those movies, because this was 2006, and this was really, really good, and it's great because it did something different. It didn't just try to replicate Blair Witch. It applied, I mean, it still, you know, tried to make a horror movie, but they applied it to something else. It's kind of like, I feel a lot like this is... really similar to Cabin in the Woods,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that they're taking the whole, you know, oh, people are trapped in, or college kids trapped in a cabin, mm-hmm. and then turning it into a big joke. And this is taking the whole slasher movie villain trope and just turning it into a big joke. And
right. Which there is another movie that I'll mention later, but yeah, as taking it as a joke, because, like you said, they had the Blair Witch Project, which is a found footage. That's the thing that really, like, kicked it off. Mm-hmm. And then, at least that, which, you know, I think the documentaries kind of came later. I mean, a little bit of DNA of, like, this is Spinal Tap is in this movie, mm-hmm. you know. At a certain point, that kind of pretty much goes into all mockumentaries made after the fact. Yep. But like, we got Blair Witch, which I looked up was... 1999,
okay.
And then, but, you know, earlier in the decade, we had Scream, which was the big deconstruction of the horror film franchise in that, yep. And then, so they were just talking about horror films, Blair Witch has found footage that's in a world, and then this comes around in, what did you say, it's 2006?
Yep.
It's like a weird blending of that, where there's a huge reverence for the genre, but also it's trying to deconstruct it in this format that is popular for the time. And so this is almost like the next logical step from Scream, as like Cabin in the Woods was like the next decade's answer to Leslie Vernon. Because mm-hmm. I have to believe that, you know, the people who made Cabin in the Woods also kind of would probably have watched Behind the Mask as well. Can't say for sure, but it almost seems like there's still some stuff. And then another movie that I'll talk about a little bit later, when it comes to recommendations. But I just feel like it just kind of like there's a flow to how like these movies that are metatextual, I suppose, or, you know, just trying to talk about the genre they're in while also being one, mm-hmm. which I think this movie probably does the best out of any of them. Like, even Cabin in the Woods is a little bit like, it's high concept, a little bit too much on the nose for me, where this one just kind of like, it feels like it's just trying to have some fun.
Yeah.
And even if it doesn't always make sense, then it's like moving along at a brisk mm-hmm. pace and like taking jabs at the genre while also like being the biggest fanboys for it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I did remember what I was going to say about Leslie Vernon as a character, which is that he reminds me a lot of another found footage type movie series, which is the Creep movies. Okay. And the way that Mark Duplass plays Aaron, or whatever he goes by. I know he changes his name in the second one.
The Creep.
Yeah, just The Creep. It's very similar to, or it's a very similar character to, Mark Duplass in those movies, because he's so damn likable that you don't want to think he's capable of what you know is going to happen. And then as the movie gets on or goes on, there are things that are just more unsettling and more unsettling. And obviously Creep and Creep 2 are way more on the horror end of this. And Leslie Vernon is way more on the comedy side of the spectrum. And speaking of that, mm-hmm. I do want to talk about some of the horror stuff, particularly the last 30 minutes. Because I feel like a lot of what we've been talking about takes place in every, you know, is all the build up to the haunted house and the massacre that happens. So, I don't know about you, but I have never been a huge fan of that part of the movie. And I think...
Because as much as they build it up, they still are unable to escape the trappings of the genre that they're in. No matter how much they're trying to talk about mm-hmm. it and deconstruct it, like, they still box themselves in at the end, which... There is a little twist and turn there. Like, yep. If we're talking spoilers, like, it's not actually the girl they've been following. Like, the documentary crew and Leslie, that is, like, the actual girl in the Taylor. Group. It's actually Taylor, yep. who is the documentary person
which is a great twist. In front of the camera. I really, really enjoy that.
Right. And it's one of those things that, like, we've seen it so many times that we already know. Yeah. We know what's going to happen. And, like, I can't actually remember how I reacted the first time, but I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Because, like, this person that you spent most of the time with, like, why wouldn't you have Leslie Vernon and then this Taylor, who has been the one who's, like, verbally combating him, like, the entire movie, mm-hmm. or, like, trying to, like, suss out, like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you so welcoming to having us see what you're doing and explain what you're doing? Because at the beginning he says, I'm not going to explain the why.
Yep.
Which is like what I feel like so many of the filmmakers, like, that's the thing with horror franchises, this slasher genre in particular, is like, you get so long in the tooth and they have to explain, like, oh, this is what set, you know, Michael Myers off to do this thing, especially with the Halloween remake. And he specifically goes, like, if we're not going to talk about that, we're going to talk about how I set everything yep. up. And then, like, they build it all up, and then, of course, they find out she's a virgin. She doesn't want to admit yep. it. And be like, yep, this is the virgin that I've been going after. You just haven't known that I've been scoping you out. And then, from there, then the movie ensues in, like, a pretty particular fashion. And with the twist, like, it doesn't actually, like, change a lot of what that third act would be if it was actually the girl that they thought he was going to go after. Mm-hmm. But it does make a lot of sense that you'd want to spend time with. It's just when you get to that point, it's so, like, you know what's going to happen. Yep. Like, they still write it as, like, a very I feel like they've lifted the genre on a pedestal so much that they have to pay it off and be, like Leslie mm-hmm. says, like, before, he's just like, you gotta respect convention. Be like, well, I don't know. You're already kind of trying to tear it apart for most of the movie. Why are you gonna be loyal to it in the end?
Oh, yeah, and especially at the end, it does kind of feel like when they get to the parts where they're in the house and Taylor is like, okay, what happens next? Next he's going to be here, so let's go here. It does kind of just feel like they rush that whole bit just to be like, all right, well, you guys saw the good part, so let's just hurry up and wrap this up so that we can all go mm-hmm. home. And I just want to say, you know, I'm not saying that the last half hour isn't fun to watch, because I think it is. And I think they do a good job of paying off a lot of the blood and a lot of the gore and a lot of the stuff that you would expect from this type of movie. I just feel like the one thing in particular that kind of breaks it for me is these three random people just show up and start telling all these high school kids what they need to be doing and where they need to go and that somebody's trying to kill them. And these kids are just like, cool. We're on board.
Yeah. Be like, wait, what do you mean? You've been talking to him?
Yeah.
Like, we don't trust you either. That's kind of like what I feel like they should.
And because they yeah, do say that. They do say one of the kids, I think her name's Karen, or Kelly. Kelly. Yeah, her boyfriend is like, you guys have been talking to this guy? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, okay, cool. And they're like, how long have you been talking to him for? And they don't even say anything. And they're like, all right, well, what do you guys want to do? what's the plan? So that part, like, is kind of disappointing, because they just kind of, it's kind of like that thing that you mentioned where, like, why does Eugene still enter a sensory deprivation tank? We're just not going to answer that question. And same thing with this. Yeah. Why are you guys doing everything these three random people with a camera that showed up are telling you to, what they're telling you to do? Just cause.
Mm-hmm. Just cause.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we need to move the movie along. Come on, let's go. Like, we don't have that much time or apparently much budget. We just have this one house, and we just kind of need to make it work. Mm-hmm. So we need to go.
We also only have Robert Englund for 2 days, so got to make the most of him.
Yeah.
Did you know that Kane Hodder is in this movie?
Yeah, isn't he the guy at the end?
Yeah, he's...
like, in the after-credits sequence?
Yep, he's the guy in the after-credits sequence. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was funny.
Which in some instances, I guess he is like the top credited person for some reason.
Yep.
Because he's like the, that doesn't make any
no,
sense.
No, he Robert Englund and who's the guy that played Jane? I swear it's Jim something, but I don't remember his name. Those two guys, or those three guys, are like almost always at the top of the credits, which is really funny because Kane Hodder especially is in the movie for like a couple of minutes and he doesn't have any lines.
No.
And to be honest, if you didn't tell me that was Kane Hodder, I would not have any way of knowing that was Kane Hodder, because he appears in an after credits sequence. At the end of the movie, Leslie is apparently killed because Taylor squishes his head in a apple crusher and then lights him on fire, and then it cuts to this really, really choppy tape footage of
CCTV,
yep, of a body being brought in, and there's a coroner in the room, and then Leslie just kind of sits up and apparently
looks at him, and then it cuts. Yep.
And apparently the coroner is Kane Hodder. So he's just literally in the movie for maybe 2 minutes. And he doesn't say anything. And it's such bad footage that you would have no way of knowing it's him. At all.
No. Right. And I feel like that is... well, like, you mean, they can... if they wanted to get Kane Hodder and Kane Hodder was all, like, gung-ho to do it... mm-hmm. Like, even people who have seen most of what Kane Hodder has done...
you mean the Friday the 13th movies?
They don't know what he looks like.
Yeah.
Like, he's been in... I think he had, like, cameo roles in, like, plenty of the Friday the 13th movies that he's, like played Jason as.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, well, you can be, like, cop number two, or, you know, the person who tells him, don't go there, blah. But, but yeah, I don't know. It's like Robert Englund, I think he brings
his A game
a little bit more to the table, just because in his very few scenes. I don't want to harsh on Kane Hodder too much. Were just like, hey, you want to do this? Come on in and be like, whatever.
I don't want to harsh on anybody in this cast, because considering they probably all did not get paid a lot of money, they are all doing top-notch work. And yeah, 100% Robert Englund totally sells his performance of this film. The only other thing that I have to really rip on this movie about is, and I haven't watched this movie for quite a few years, and when I was watching it today, I was like, man, some of these jokes have not aged that well.
No, like the pro-life one?
Yep, the pro-life one. What's the other one? She says you're pro-life and you're chauvinist. That's what it is.
In your show, yep. Yeah, because they were just like, he was just like, because the virgin has to grab my weapon. be like, why does it have to be a big axe? Be like, well, don't you know? Be like, and he says it like very directly. He doesn't like mince words at a certain point. He does say the C word. I do not feel comfortable for some reason, just because I'm being recorded. But and he was just like, he also brought up a term that I was not familiar with, and I didn't look it up when I first saw it. Apparently, it was the opposite of phallic being.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the term either, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yonic.
Yep, that's it.
Which is, well, the lady parts.
And he
like goes on about like how the closet, you don't just go into a closet when someone's hiding in it because that's the womb.
Yep.
And you're just like, shut up. And so that's where the whole like pro-life comes in. Because when you're in the womb, you're innocent, and that's...
I think the biggest reason that I feel disappointed is because if this had been made today, those lines could have been really, really funny if they had just changed them a little bit. And so I guess now let's get into what are some of the changes that we could make if they were to make another one, or if we could just go back and make a few changes. And honestly, I think the biggest tinkering that I would do is with those few lines of dialogue. Because I feel like there is much funnier stuff that could be happening, as opposed to, oh, you're pro-life and you're chauvinist. The other thing that I really wish, and I know we kind of talked about this, but I, you know, we've both seen a lot of low budget horror movies. Some of which are genuinely frightening, some of which are genuinely silly in how unfrightening they are. And I don't think that this one is so bad it's silly. I also don't think that there's very many scares, at least for me, other than the moment that I mentioned where he kills Todd, the camera guy.
Yes, very poignant scene.
Yeah, and other than that, there's not a lot that they do. And actually, the only other death that I really remember, and it's because it's, I think it's pretty funny, is when they tell Kelly that Leslie wants to find her, and she's like, well, he's not going to find me because I'm going to go out this window, and they're like, don't go out the window, and then she goes out the window and just immediately falls and dies.
Yeah, she grabs onto one of the branches in which Leslie says, yep. Yeah, I've
pre-cut.
Any kind of weight on any of these pre-cut branches, then they're just going to fall.
Yep.
He doesn't necessarily say they're going to die, but they'd probably be immortalized. No, she just dies.
She just dies.
They're like, all right, that's out of the way.
and that was so funny because, you know, it's such a simple way to kill off a character who up until this, the whole movie has been so important, and mm-hmm. now just you don't even get to see her die. She just falls out a window and everybody looks out the window and they're like, oh, she's dead. Leslie's not going to be happy.
And I think, I probably would have liked more of, Leslie being like the victim,
because
mm-hmm. like especially with the pre-cut branches, it reminded me of the part where there's like, aren't you, if you're doing all this, isn't this kind of cheating? And he's just like, hey, statistically the odds are stacked against me. I'm yeah. just preparing. I'm trying to do everything in my power to like be able to be like, well, it's not really fair what you're doing. Be like, they're more of them. Mm-hmm. Like, they could easily overwhelm me if they didn't scatter like idiots. And so to that degree, like, I always, like, I feel like in another movie, or, like, in a sequel of this, I feel like if another documentary crew, like, was, like following him around, he'd be like, oh, man, it's so much work. I don't have any social life. I just go to and from, like, sometimes I get some fast food, but like my life is kind of a husk of what it was. It'd be like how much of a toll it's taken out of him, because he seems like very excited about his first time mm-hmm. in this movie, and I would like to see just kind of more of like the nuts and bolts of it. I mean, we get a whole bunch of it in that hour
yeah.
of the film before the horror movie starts.
Oh yeah.
At, you know, the last 30 minutes, but yeah, I just think a little bit more of the kind of beleaguered serial killer would probably be
good. I would really like to posit as a sequel idea, and if you have one that you'd want to mention, I would love to hear it if you have any more detail to go into. But as a sequel idea, I really like the creep movies. And I don't know if you've seen Creep 2. Have you? Okay, so for anyone who hasn't seen Creep 2, I mean, this is the opening of the movie, so do with, if you consider that a spoiler and you really want to see the Creep movies, which I highly recommend, then, I don't know, just skip ahead a few minutes. But Creep 2 opens with Mark Duplass, or not Mark Duplass, it opens with the guy who plays the taxi driver in Deadpool. Dipinder, okay. Whatever his name is. Mm-hmm. I don't know his real name, but he's like, he opens this box and there's like a teddy bear or something in it, and it's got a nanny cam, and he doesn't realize, and you're watching him through the nanny cam, and he's like, oh my god, like, why are people sending me this stuff? And then he like opens this video, and or he gets a DVD and he puts in his DVD player, and it's like video of him sleeping, and he calls somebody and he's like, you've got to come over here right now. Like, I am so upset. Like, what the fuck is going on? And then this guy comes over, and it's Mark Duplass and his character. And you're like, oh, well, this is interesting. And then Mark Duplass is like, oh, my God, have you called 911 yet? And he's like, yeah, I tried. They won't do anything. And he's like, oh, shit, man. Like, this is really freaky. Like, why don't you go grab a beer? And so he – or why don't you go grab us some beers? And so he goes into the kitchen. And then Mark Duplass looks at the camera and winks. And then he grabs the bear and moves it into the next room so that he can keep recording. And then eventually he's like, look, I got to come clean. Like, I'm the one that's been filming you. I've hidden cameras all over your house. There's one in that bear. Like, I don't know how you couldn't see it. And now I'm going to kill you. And then he just stabs him to death. And then he dies. And then he looks at the camera and he's like, you know, I don't get any joy out of this anymore. Like, this is not fun. I got to do something different. And
Creep 2.
Yeah, and that's the setup for Creep 2, is that he hires another documentarian to follow himself, or not follow him around all day. And at the end of the day, he is going to kill himself. And he's just going to tell this person about his life, and then he's going to die. And that would be such a fun setup, or something like that, if they were to do a sequel to Behind the Mask, which I know that people have asked them at various festivals for over a decade now. Yes. Are you going to make a sequel to Leslie Vernon? Which this filmmaker has only made one other movie after this, and it was in like 2009. And a lot of the cast hasn't done much since Leslie Vernon, and I mean, other than, you know, the three big guys. But I would love it if this movie picked up with, and I'm glad that we were kind of on the same wavelength. I would love it if this picked up with Leslie being like, you know, I've just been killing people. Like, I didn't realize it was going to take this much out of me. This is not fun anymore. And I think that there is definite, like, the horror genre has evolved enough over the last 13 years that there is definitely enough they could make enough new material that they could make another Leslie Vernon and still have it be fresh and original. I do get worried that with something like this, they're going to fall into, and I know I talked about this on the show, but like Super Troopers and Super Troopers 2 territory, where they basically just make the same movie over again, which would be really unfortunate. Because Leslie Vernon is such a fun character, and I enjoy watching the first one so much. All right. Well, I feel like that pretty, I know that we could talk a lot more about this movie because you and I both love it so much, but and it is really, really good, and it is really, really fun and unique. And so I guess my question is, do you recommend people check out this movie?
Oh, not at all. I would, no, do not.
All right, I would obviously. I would also not recommend anyone check out this movie. You should just leave all the copies for Donnie and I to watch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You should watch this movie. And then I have two recommendations. They're both movies that I've mentioned on the show before. I hope they're movies that we can do on the show now that we've kind of changed the format a little bit. One of them is Final Girls, which is a movie about a group of college students who get sucked into an 80s horror movie. And then the other one is Tragedy Girls, which is a horror comedy about these two girls who are trying to create a serial killer and then find the serial killer that they have created. So yeah, those are the two that I would recommend. I don't know if you have, I think you mentioned that you have a recommendation that you would throw out there for people if they like Leslie Vernon, or if they want to watch something like Leslie Vernon.
Yeah, I mean, other than the stuff that we've already said, like made reference to, like Blair Witch Project, mm-hmm. or the Scream series, which in and of itself became a parody of what its premise was in the beginning. Yep. And then also just watching Cabin in the Woods. And then I said earlier that I was going to mention another film, and it has Fran Kranz, who I think is a great comedic actor. He's in a lot of Joss Whedon stuff. He's in Cabin of the Woods. Cabin in the Woods. But
he's the stoner guy, also right?
He's the stoner guy, yep. With the sweet bong. So he starred in a movie with another Joss Whedon alum, Allison Hannigan, and it was called You Might Be the Killer. And it's obviously more supernatural, but it's another deconstruction.
Oh, of like, yeah. Jason Thompson said this was really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would highly recommend it. I mean, honestly, I was watching Cabin in the Woods on Sci-Fi or something, and then this just kind of rolled on after that ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, this looks stupid. But then, like, you start watching it, and you're like, oh, okay, they're doing something a little bit more. Like, at first, you think they're being a little bit too cheeky, mm-hmm. but then it starts rolling into, it has its own groove to it. And, I think it's a more supernatural element. The title obviously makes it seem like it's a little off kilter in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you'd think that would be the only novelty it has, but it does go a little bit further with that. And I would just say that it plays with tropes, probably not in a way that hasn't been done before. Mm-hmm. But it still feels fresh while, like, being in the box of slasher films. It might, like I said, I think it's a little bit too cheeky with the humor, but it's still pretty funny. And there's enough moments in it where, like, all the characters just, like, stop dead in their tracks and go, like, are we, like, in a slasher movie or something? This is stupid, you know? And I think that's something that could be overdone, but it keeps momentum up, and it's another movie that's told not in chronological order. So it's kind of jumping forward, and it's like, oh, everyone's dead. And then it cuts back, and then it's like, oh, the first day of the camp, you know? And then it jumps forward, and it goes back. So it kind of keeps things alive that way. And it does it in a way where, like, you know, like a novel would, where, like, certain things are revealed to you at certain times. So, like, it makes the story, I think if it was told in chronological order, probably not great. Yeah. Same thing with, like, Pulp Fiction, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. If you've ever seen the great out-of-chronological film Memento, mm-hmm. you try to watch that, and I have watched it in chronological order, it is a very boring film.
Yes.
I still love it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also, not that we're plugging, Shudder, but I would recommend if you have, like, there's probably a 1 month free trial of Shudder. We don't have any promo codes, but if you want to go on there, you can watch, Leslie Vernon or Behind the Mask, and You Might Be the Killer is on there as well. And I feel like that would be a good double feature.
I'm probably going to get me some Shudder. All right. Well, I'd like to go ahead and tell people to please follow me on Twitter at ArgueWithJason, where I post stupid statements and try to goat people into arguing with me. And
kill people.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you?
That's terrible.
Oh, and then I'm still working on and hoping to shoot my first short film, which should be hopefully up near the end of the summer or the beginning of the fall. So that will be happening. Donnie, you have anything that you would like to throw into the world?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can, but it's a whole bunch of nothing on there. And yeah, I don't know. Just, you know, living life. I hope you do the same.
All right. Well, please review our show and follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And I think that's it. And thank you to Dr. Tub Thumper for making the musics that we plays on the shows. And thank you to Prolix for doing our art. Please do not look up Dr. Tub Thumper because that's not his real name. And I think this is the only song that he wishes to be credited by under that name. But
you will be on a watch list if you Google it.
But please do look up Prolix on Instagram and Twitter and Twitch and everywhere else that you can search things, because I'm pretty sure you'll find him somewhere. All right, and then I'd also like to thank Caitlin Industries for editing our show. And I think that's about it. Thank you so much for listening. We will have another show next week. So dramatic. all right. Watch more movies. Bye.
Bye.